Off the Ball, GAA.
Yeah, it was a very high scoring game. I suppose we were seeing a lot of war from Division 1A this year, and we know that they were playing a level above us. And I suppose the first half was even, but we know they're a serious side.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
But of preview, very welcome to Off the Ball Breakfast this Friday morning. 087-9180-180 is where you'll get us on WhatsApp. If you are listening, go loud now, but prefer to watch us, type in Off the Ball on YouTube and you'll see a live thumbnail. Click on that. You will see the following. Westmeath, Wigan Athletic, and to complete the W's, welcome to producer for the day, MB. It's Matthew Brennan. Good morning.
Good morning, Colm.
Keith Tracy and Friday. But live today, first of all, I'd say hi to Keith Tracy. Or should I say Keith Patrick Tracy? Correct?
Yeah, well, I have a lot of middle names. A lot.
So what's the middle name of your middle name?
My whole name is Keith Patrick Thomas Anthony Tracy.
Which one is confirmation?
Anthony. I was Patrick Thomas. Originally, I was going to be Patrick, but... they decided to call me Keith at the last minute, so I was Keith Patrick Thomas when I was born, and then Anthony came towards the end.
I have a theme here, right, that we want to get going. I want to list out your Wikipedia.
Okay.
We'll do paragraphs at a time over the next few months, and just correct it if Wikipedia is wrong in any of this. All right, okay. I'll pick a random part. This is club career.
I'm going to go and edit some of the later ones.
On the 23rd of November 2006, Tracy joined Stockport County on a one-month loan deal.
Sounds right, yeah.
He made a Stockport debut in a one-all draw against Macclesfield on the 25th of November 2006. After ending his loan spell at Stockport County, making 4 appearances, Tracy signed a new contract with the club on the 12th of June 2007, keeping him there until 2011. Correct?
Yeah. There's a good story with the Stockport stuff.
Yeah.
When I signed for them for a month, it was... to do me over the Christmas period. Blackburn wanted me to get a bit of first team football. So it was Jim Gannon, the Irish boy, was managing Stockport. So we said, I'll go there. I didn't drive at the time. So they arranged somebody to collect me from my digs in Blackburn, bring me to Stockport, and everything was sorted every day. But when I think we played Wickham away, and say it was the 22nd, 23rd of December, my loan deal was up, and Jim Gannon came onto the bus and said to me in front of all the other players, I spoke to Blackburn, you can stay for another month on loan if you like, it's up to you. And I said, well, what if I'm not staying? He said, oh, they said you can go back to Dublin and have Christmas at home with your family. I'm going home, Jim. It was awkward, because he obviously wanted me to stay for a month, and I thought, I'm 18, being dangled Christmas at home for the first time in 2 years, and I just said, yeah, I'm off.
Do you regret that at all, no?
Yeah, I do. But you know, when you're young, like, people always tell you Christmas is going to be a horrible period. And I think I'd had 2 years previous where I didn't manage to get home, and I just had that itch, and I seen half a yard to think I can get home for Christmas here, and I took it. But yeah, it's not something I look back on and think, well done, Keith. Yeah. It was one of those Muppet moves I did back in the day.
Didn't end there with you and the internet today.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to welcome Meta AI to the conversation.
God.
We're doing this pre-show. Give me a funny stat about Keith Tracy. I don't know if this is funny, but he once played a professional game drunk and he still nearly scored.
Yeah.
Have you told us that before? Burnley against Cardiff, funny enough.
Yeah, I remember the game.
Even the show today with Brian Barry Murphy.
I remember the game. It was funny in the end, because we played against Southampton, and me and Dean Marnie got took off at half time by Eddie Howe.
Mm.
And you can imagine being taken off at half time against Southampton, you're thinking, well, I'm definitely not playing on Tuesday in the cup. But he decided he was going to play me. I had had a couple of drinks in the run up to the game, and he basically called me down the bus to the front of the bus when we're on the way to Cardiff and said, look, I don't know whether I'm crazy or I'm a genius, but I'm going to start you today. And I thought, that's the last thing I need. But there was one, I hit the bar. The ball bounced on the edge of the 18 yard box, and I'm not saying this for any sort of dramatic effect or to be funny. I seen about 30 footballs coming at me, and I just swung and I hit the ball and it bounced off the crossbar. But we had a Scottish boy playing on the right wing called Alex McDonald, and he was like a reserve player, like fringe player.
Yeah.
He stunk the house out. He was absolutely awful, and it took the shine off of me on the left wing. So,
Shout out there this morning.
Yeah, I saw it got away. Sorry, Macker, but you were poor that day. And he knew it himself. But yeah, I saw it got away with it, but everybody knew I was, like, my performance was okay, but people could smell the drink off me and worrying signs.
More wholesome ones here. He used to judge his own fitness levels by comparing himself to Robbie Fowler at Blackburn. Truthfully, you would see club legends like Rocky Santa Cruz skipping sessions and chronic injuries, and Robbie Fowler, in quote, taking it a little easy. So young Keith thought, I must be on the same level, I can do that too. Is that true? Is Zuckerberg right?
Yeah, I think I lean toward, I wouldn't say bad characters, but Robbie was at a different stage in his career. I could have linked on to the likes of Craig Bellamy. He was a brilliant trainer, but I sort of gravitated towards, you know, the likes of Tugoi, who was again in the twilight of his career, and even Roque Santa Cruz, who would have been a bit younger, but very rarely would you see him on the training pitch Monday to Thursday. He would turn up on a Friday, have a little jog, do some shooting, and then be amazing on a Saturday and just repeat it again. So I sort of looked at that and thought, yeah, sure, why do I need to train? I'll do what the lads are doing. And no, I was never clever enough to step back and go, well, Keith, you're a teenager. Yeah. You should be training every single day. And yeah, I looked at it and thought, like, I mean, Robbie Fowler's nickname at Blackburn was the party liaison. He had a pay-as-you-play deal. Indeed. So he very rarely played. But looking at his finishing, when we did finishing sessions, crossing and finishing sessions, he was still unbelievable. Just probably couldn't run as much.
Cushioned finishes into the corner.
Cushioned finishes, and he used to he'd have his back to goal, and he'd just turn and like smack it into the corner, and you'd think, how did he do it? And he'd say simple stuff like, the goal never moves, Keith. You're like, yeah, well, why do you need visual clarification of where it is if it never moves? It's just little things. You go, yeah, that makes sense.
Infuriating simplicity for the rest who can't do it.
Did Christian Vieri play Trent Blackburn? Did you see
that
one time?
Yeah, I was there with Christian. Yeah, that's another one I like to throw out every now and then. But that's a great story as well. I honestly can't remember where we were. We were either in Austria or in Italy. We were up in a mountain somewhere doing a load of running. And Christian Vieri rocked up one morning, and he had a... We were doing like the 320 metre runs, and we'd do six, and then the seventh would be at the as quick as you could. And just by chance, I'm in and around Christian as we're doing it, and he just kept saying, what am I doing? I was on a yacht off the coast of Monaco yesterday, and we didn't see him after that.
You never
the
came
run
back.
Finished him. But again, you could see his finishing ability was unbelievable, but he had a bit of a belly on him at the time. And yeah, well, unbelievable player, and great to say. Christian Vieri is one of those players you always signed on Football Manager back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Number 32. Mm. Sensational. Had a massive money move within Serie A at the time, which would have been unusual.
Yeah.
He was 35 at the time. Free agent after
Your 11 you played with would be sensational. I think we've done that, have we?
I feel like that might be how Vieri came up. I feel like
probably was. But you mentioned Craig Bellamy there a few minutes ago. He might be a contender. Craig Bellamy, very kind words about Brian Barry Murphy this season.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, obviously Craig Bellamy's managing Wales at the moment. They'll be disappointed in the same way we are that they didn't manage to qualify for the World Cup. Probably more frustrated with how that went. But he was speaking earlier on in the season about, I can't remember the exact words, quotes of it, but he was basically saying that this is the first time in a long time that he's getting good enjoyment out of watching Cardiff in general. And then also the fact that the way Brian Barry Murphy plays football and his idea of how football should be played is, Craig Bellamy thinks, is along the same lines as himself, and it's having a directly positive impact on the Wales national team. So it'll be interesting to see what Brian has to say about that later on, but I'm sure it'll only be kind, you know.
Do you want one final one from Meta AI?
Yeah.
For Keith Tracy. Give me another fun fact about Keith Tracy. All right. Thinking. Came back. He scored a hat-trick once and still thinks it's, quote, a strange one. But the description here from Meta AI... You can get this on WhatsApp. This is a feature on WhatsApp. On the Off the Ball show, they did a Keith Friday segment where the wacky questions were including hat-trick scored. So Keith Friday has made it to Mark Zuckerberg's mind.
Zuckerberg's in the comments.
That's pretty impressive for us, isn't it? That's straight up on our LinkedIn.
It is. But I feel like a lot of people actually prefer Keith Friday than Keith Tracy, which is a little bit sad for me.
Well, it's your character. A bit like Terry Bollea played Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. You're a pro. That was amazing.
Lovely. We watched it.
We did.
Huh? Have people seen it out there? The 4-part new Netflix documentary series about Hulk Hogan?
I watched the first episode last night, yeah.
You watched the first one, you watched the first two, so did I. You didn't have much context going in.
I wouldn't be big into wrestling at all. Just wouldn't be my cup of tea. Like, I wouldn't be particularly like snobby when it comes to sport or anything like that, you know, in terms of that's not a sport or whatever.
Sports entertainment, I think they have it down.
Yeah, and that's fine. Like, I'm not gonna die on a hill of wrestling not being a sport or being a sport. Like, I'm happy enough for people to enjoy whatever they want. But yeah, I think we were kind of talking about this yesterday about Hulk Hogan kind of transcending it a little bit, in that I wouldn't really have ever watched wrestling, but I know who he is.
Exactly.
You know? And I know he was not particularly well liked, I suppose, the later he got in life. Yeah,
he's two parts,
became very polarizing. But in the first episode of what I watched last night, the polarizing side of it isn't really there. You can see they're kind of leaning into it a bit now when he starts doing the American thing, which was sort of something that came in right at the end of the first episode last night. But it's an intriguing one. There was some I actually did the weight of how many people followed wrestling at that time when he was first coming on the scene, like looking at some of the crowds, like it was ridiculous, you know, the people who were there.
Like, there'd be plenty of people in our comments, our regulars on YouTube, who would have been around at this time, but he was massive. Like, it's kind of hard to compute, because you and I were talking about this beforehand, we're only a few months apart, so we're a bit too young for him. But I kind of remember him and The Undertaker and him being in movies. He was in kids' movies in the 90s, so I'd see
that's one that triggered me last night. He was in The Gremlins.
Yeah, he'd be thrown around cinema. Everywhere.
Yeah, he was everywhere, wasn't he? He was brilliant. But I was obviously very aware of Hulk Hogan and the other aliases he had building up before he became Hulk Hogan. But I was always Stone Cold Steve Austin. I absolutely loved him and The Rock, Jake the Snake. There was loads. I didn't gravitate towards the Hulk. I don't know why. Obviously very aware of him, but yeah, I didn't realise it was as competitive as it is. You know, the wrestling in the background. But yeah,
it's mad how they just sort of picked him as you're going to be the guy. And then he obviously took that mantle and was like, I'm going to be the guy. But it's also, I am big into like boxing and MMA and all that sort of stuff, like combat sports in general. And I know wrestling is amateur wrestling and all is part of that too. But it's funny the kind of way he goes on and the outside of the ring stuff with the promos and all that sort of stuff, how that's become a modern thing in real sort of combat sports as well, you know, with the promos, cutting promos before fights and selling stuff and all that sort of thing. So he's definitely had a wide ranging impact on it. But I'd be intrigued. It wouldn't be something I would have gone to watch in my own time to just be like, I'm going to watch 4 episodes of this here. But actually, after watching the first episode last night, I think now I'll go and finish it out and see exactly what he's all about. But it was interesting stuff even with his brother, like when he's young and his father kind of...
You haven't got to episode 2
No,
yet.
I haven't got to episode 2. So even just just off of episode 1, that like the father was always bigging up the other brother, and he was always this other guy, and he was never big enough, and he was smaller than his brother and all this sort of stuff. And that obviously played a part in him going on to do what he did.
Yeah, I'm telling you, this commonality of people who like become superstars, oftentimes broken background.
Yeah.
Troubled childhood. So his one was like, the parents were there, but they were real poor from Tampa, Florida, and his dad just wasn't basically having him and preferred the brother, which is that's Johnny Cash-esque. The same thing with Johnny Cash.
Yeah. There's a lot of childhood trauma.
And yeah, childhood trauma, and he carries it. But I would say, like, I was saying to you, Matthew, was like, I think you should watch it because you don't have to be a fan of it. I was like, watch the first episode, then said it to you. I think you should watch this, right? Because I don't think you have to be interesting at all. It's more about how someone can go from nothing to everything and how they deal with it. And he dealt with it poorly, but he had the face of someone who dealt with it well. Because he was monumentally huge in the 80s and 90s. Like, he was massive. Like,
it's not just a wrestling story. It's somebody trying to deal with fame and addiction and everything else in between. It's a brilliant human story.
He had a great time for himself.
Which Rocky was it? Was it Rocky
3?
Rocky 3?
Yeah. He wasn't even famous doing Rocky 3.
But that's what I don't want to spoil it, but...
That was even before he became Hulk Hogan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Thunderlips.
He was Thunderlips, wasn't he? Thunderlips.
But he wasn't for a couple of years afterwards, he still wasn't rich, like he didn't have money.
Vince McMahon Sr. told him when he said, I have to go and do the Rocky movie, he said, if you go and do that, I'm going to fire you. And he said, well, fire me then. It's absolutely crazy. But in a weird way, he got a lot of eyes on wrestling, because in the Rocky movie, people went in and went, is this what wrestling is?
Yeah.
I want to get involved in this. So he actually helped wrestling, and it would have been great time, and he was unbelievable.
All in the Game is a valid question here on YouTube this morning. It's a documentary, a hagiography, are actually critical of him as a person, his constant lies, union busting, racism. I'm halfway and hasn't got to that yet, but it is in chronological order of what happened. And the first half of his life is generally, the first half of his career is generally a good thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty honest, to be honest. And like, it's WWE produced. Triple H himself, Paul Levesque, who runs the show, he's an executive producer. But they don't really seem to have a problem being honest about it. Same with the Vince McMahon documentary a while ago. So you learn a few tidbits, like Vince McMahon Sr. was the one who gave him the name, the Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
The Incredible Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Your man's Italian, Terry Bollea, but he gave him this Irish name because Vince McMahon Sr. is Irish.
Yeah.
Irish background.
Yeah.
And he liked the alliteration. That's where Hulk Hogan came in. So you learn things like that, but listen, some of it's stuff is fucked up. Like,
yeah, he started speaking about the ego at the end of the first episode as well, about how he thought the ego maybe did... kind of get a bit
that Netflix bit producer large, did a good job but, with those questions.
Yeah, he did. But at the same time, I think, it's now, as I said, I have minimal kind of background knowledge on Hulk Hogan, but I get the impression that this he's known as a bit of a liar, you know?
Yeah,
so that I would obviously take it with a pinch of salt if he's saying, oh yeah, my ego is probably a bit too big. Does he actually mean it? What does that mean to him? Like, is he just saying it because he knows it's the right thing to say? I don't know. Obviously he's not alive anymore either, which is the other thing that is like, this is all obviously recorded. They say in the start that this is the last time he's appeared on camera or something. So that in itself is fascinating.
Yeah. He only died last July, like, it's not that long ago. He's the single biggest influence on something that is massive, whether you're into it or not. Like, he is a big thing. He's the reason it's so in Jordan. And I think if you have a subject to that in any field whatsoever, it doesn't matter if it's wrestling or any other sport or any other industry, I still kind of want to hear their story of how it happened. This is like a deeply flawed guy who was at the top.
Mm.
He was good with kids. Bad in other ways.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I always think anybody, like, he was from, as you say, fairly tough background in Tampa, Florida. Didn't have an awful lot at his disposal, and then he shoots the fame and has everything he needs. People are going to struggle. I mean, I've had a snippet of that, nowhere near Hulk Hogan's degree of it, but a little snippet of coming from Dublin's north in a city to having a couple of grand a week and living in a house and thinking, what'll I do with myself, and getting bored and... You know, you find trouble, and I think that a very, very interesting story. But like I say, if you're into the wrestling, even if you're not into the wrestling, it's a brilliant story to listen to.
There's loads to it. And that second episode, it's wild enough, like some of the stories. Jesus Christ.
You forget how mad the wrestling in the 90s was. Like, people cutting their face open, jumping off the top of the cages, like sleeper matches, buried alive matches. Like, as a kid, I watched it and thought, like, oh, this is all real, but... It's watered down now, isn't it? It's nowhere near it. When's the last time you've seen somebody being hit by a chair in wrestling?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Remember, I used to go up and watch on it. Was it the Sunday morning you'd watch the wrestling highlights? And as somebody was about to get a smack of a chair, they'd pause it so you wouldn't actually see the impact, and then you'd see them on the ground. And I was brilliant. Like, me and my son Teddy now is 7, and the wrestling matches we have on the bed now is brilliant. Like,
the rivalry.
Brilliant rivalry. Yeah. Tag team matches and all coming in.
Did you let him win?
Have to let him in. Yeah, I always have to let him in.
But there's always an agreed winner, of course, as part of the track of the game. Yes, like, yes, it's choreography, isn't it? Dylan's there saying, Hogan Knows Best was peak daytime MTV TV back in the day. It truly was. It was 20 years ago. That's the thing about it, he says, to answer All in the Game's question as well, is this a truthful documentary? He's like, basically saying the last 20 years of his life is rubbish. 2 decades, like.
Do you know what?
And the first 20 of his professional career were brilliant.
I found very sobering when... He was the very first couple of minutes of the first episode. He's lifting heavy, heavy weights. And this is towards the end of his life before he passes away. And somebody says, oh, you're still lifting heavy weights, Hulk. And he goes, yeah, but I can't open a bottle of water.
Yeah, he gets his own.
His fine motors are gone. Like, and just think, you can be as strong as you like.
That's what I mean. Like, I know, like, plenty of people aren't into this at all, into wrestling.
Yeah.
I get that, like, but they get real defensive when you say it's fake. Like, so there is that, you know, that clip where he chokes the TV presenter out of it 3 days before WrestleMania, and they're in trouble. They have $500,000 lawsuit because they get annoyed because it's like, yeah, it's predetermined, but these boys actually get hurt.
You know, some of the trauma that these lads go through, whether it be like the brain trauma, and there's some countless stories
of how stuff has gone terrible. Huge CTE issues in that sport. It's not just American football. Yeah.
There's little signals
sport.
That the ref have. You know, if somebody's actually genuinely hurt, they'll do a signal, and people will know, like, he's hurt now.
You see this boy back in the Hulk Hogan, like, massive back in the day. And then you see him now when he's in the walking stick, or when he was filmed in the documentary last year.
Yeah.
Same with, there's loads of them like that. It's like Kurt Angle's the same.
Didn't Kurt Angle break his neck?
Yeah, well, he did on the Olympics in 1996 when he was legitimately wrestling to win a gold medal. But the wear and tear of wrestling got him. Because they're on the road all the time, especially back then. They were like on the road 300 days a year.
So
they'd be wrestling all the time.
Kurt Angle was a real wrestler, for want of a better phrase, and then went into the entertainment. And Brock Lesnar was a UFC fighter.
He was, he went back to MMA. Drawing it and then went back to wrestling
and
again.
To wrestling.
But it must be very difficult to go from real to fake.
Yeah,
real to
I was
fake
just thinking that,
I'd say it's more difficult to control yourself in the fake when you are transitioning between the
Reek
and the fake.
Yeah, you could reel the fake. Hurt someone like
reel in the fake. Yeah,
would you go tit for tat? Like, say me and you were having a wrestling match, and you bopped me on the nose a little bit, and I thought, oh, that stung a bit. Would you bop him back?
I think those guys would.
Yeah,
I think Brock Lesnar, if he like, you're after hurting me there.
Yeah, you're getting a bit back.
Yeah, you're getting it.
I think it's called hitting them stiff in return. So they would hit each other, every so often.
Mm.
For real. Some of the bodies of these lads, like the wear and tear is unbelievable.
Whatever about the bodies, he was rocking some trim, wasn't he? The haircut. Hulk Hogan's hair.
That's what made him stand
out. What's going on there?
I don't think that was by choice. That's just a bald head, isn't it?
No, but the long blonde is a choice for sure. Cut that off if you want.
Ah, and it was like freshly shampooed all the time.
Yeah.
Like,
not maintenance.
He could not have been more tanned, couldn't he?
Yeah.
He was the most tanned man in the 80s.
His first wife says that. I said he didn't know what a tanning bed was until he met me.
There you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's well worth it, even if you have no interest in it. It's just a mental human story of what happened to this guy. He had no right to get that famous. And also, good bass player by all accounts. Very good musician. That's what he first was. He was a travelling musician.
Didn't he then? Something happened where he said he was something of Metallica. Was there? Did he say he was. So let come back to me.
Okay. I'll come back. Yeah, there's loads to get through here. So as I said, with the League of Ireland tonight, we'll talk with Owen Heary about that. Four games out of five played today. We got the URC this weekend, Interpro Derby, Munster against Ulster. France play Ireland in the Women's Six Nations. We have Gaelic football and hurling that we'll get stuck into with Mick Foley. Big news today, actually, for the Cork Limerick game. No Aaron Gillan for Limerick, which is massive. On the Cork side of things, of course, Munster Championship could be determined by the future of certain counties this weekend alone. The one thing we don't have guest wise today is Premier League. So let's talk with Keith Tracy, shall we?
Can I give you Hulk Hogan's Metallica thing before we do? Yeah. So supposedly Hulk Hogan has claimed on multiple occasions that he tried out for Metallica, even asserting he was friends with Lars Ulrich and was also asked to join in the early days. However, Lars Ulrich has denied knowing him. And James Hetfield expressed confusion over the story, indicating that no such audition or friendship occurred, leading to widespread scepticism of Hogan's claim.
Well, his claim of knowing people of renown is somewhat verified in the second episode, because who sits down as the talking head? The current president of the United States.
Oh, really?
Is in this documentary live. He sits down, he says, I'm just in talks with Russia, but I'll give you a few minutes, and talks about him. Tonight, Sunderland against Nottingham Forest. In the Premier League. It's strange Premier League weekend, actually, in that there are games tomorrow, but there's none on Sunday.
Mm.
Because the Brighton-Chelsea match and the Burnley-Man City games from this week, they were supposed to be on Sunday, but got rescheduled because of the FA Cup semi-final draw. So there's just the FA Cup semi-final, the second one on Sunday, the first one's on Saturday, and you also have Premier League games. So Sunderland against Forest tonight, tomorrow 12:30, Fulham against Aston Villa. Then you got 3 3 o'clock games, West Ham versus Everton, Wolves against Tottenham, Liverpool against Crystal Palace. And then tomorrow 5:30 at the Emirates, Keith, Arsenal against your favourite old boy, Eddie Howe and Newcastle United. You called it 8 days ago. Arsenal were going to lose at the Etihad. What do you think now? Are we gone?
I think it's a strange feeling. Like, a lot of people, and don't get me wrong, I did the same when Arsenal got beat by Manchester City. I sort of came away from the game thinking, well, that's okay, Arsenal had a bit of a go there. They were on the front foot, they didn't sit back and play a low block, but ultimately they got beat. And I don't understand where this... It feels like there's a wave of optimism coming from Arsenal fans all of a sudden that, oh, Arsenal play two league games now. If they can win those two league games, they'll be 6 points ahead, and it puts loads of pressure on Manchester City. I'm not so sure it does. Mm. I'm really not so sure. And I think City now will know, if we can score a whole host of goals and win the majority of our games, we win the league. I don't see Arsenal being perfect. I don't particularly see City being perfect between now and the end, but I see City gathering more points than Arsenal. I wouldn't be surprised if Arsenal lose or draw on Saturday against Newcastle. If it was in St James's Park, I'd be extremely worried. The fact that Arsenal are at home, I give them a good chance of winning the game, but honestly, wouldn't be surprised if they draw.
Can we do the running? Can we do the five games for each team and see where you think it's going to end up? So Arsenal, Newcastle, who's winning? What's the score or what's the result?
Draw.
Draw.
I think Newcastle, do well. Get a draw.
Arsenal, Fulham.
Arsenal.
There's 4 points. West Ham, Arsenal.
Arsenal.
7 points. Arsenal, Burnley.
Arsenal.
And then Arsenal Palace last day of the season. Palace at home.
Arsenal will win. Palace have got their eye on other stuff.
So they're only dropping 2 points then between now and the end. And then City away to Everton.
Win.
City at home to Brentford.
Win.
City away to Bournemouth.
Ooh. Do you know what? I'll throw a draw in there.
City at home to Palace.
Win.
And then last day of the season, City at home to Villa.
Oh. I'll say win, but I'll be hoping for a draw.
So if that all comes to fruition, then it's goal difference. You've them both drawing once and winning four. So we learn nothing.
But this is what I mean. Yeah. City will know if we match Arsenal, we win the league.
It's just the goals. If you're
to score more goals than Arsenal.
Even
and I know there's not an awful lot in it in terms of goals scored, but City from open play just look a lot more capable.
So, can I ask you, you've been a big defender of Arsenal for weeks now, and you say, like, what's the problem with what Arsenal are doing, essentially?
Yeah.
If they're winning ugly, so be it. Keep playing ugly and keep winning. So why do you think now, because they lost this game at Man City, that they're going to continue losing?
I just think probably the last, other than the Manchester City performance, which ultimately was a losing performance, so you can't pat Arsenal on the back too much. I mean, this is not a championship club coming into the Premier League where they lose and you go, well, don't worry about what lad just played. Well, they ultimately lost, so I wouldn't be giving them too much kudos for that. The Carabao Cup final, they were poor. Probably the last four or five, six performances, including the City one, haven't been anywhere near it. So the performances have dropped. Saka is a huge miss. Odegaard is, like, the amount of times I'm seeing Odegaard drop in between the two centre halves and run 10 yards left, 10 yards right, and then pass it backwards. What are you playing at? Just play with a bit more tempo, a little bit more front foot, as we did against Manchester City. But yeah, I don't know. I think generally when I think of champions, Liverpool, Manchester City, as the season goes on, they get stronger. Arsenal aren't getting stronger. If anything, they're getting weak. And that's it. I just don't see them winning the games they need to win. And like I said, I gave the points total there. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm wrong if they lost one or two in the middle of all that.
So that's a fairly grim outlook, right, for the rest of the season. And can you throw in your Champions League prediction while you're at it? Atletico Madrid.
It's so difficult because honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if we got to the final. I wouldn't be surprised if we got beat by Atletico.
Okay,
Atletico's lineup at the weekend again was crazy.
They're doing a Leinster on it.
It's ridiculous.
So Atletico Madrid win the two legs of the semi final. Arsenal are out, and Arsenal lose the Premier League title. What then for you and Mikel Arteta
in terms of sacking him?
Well, I'm not saying sacking. I'm just wondering what you would do and what you do with the manager and what your preference would be for the squad. Does it need a lot of changes in the summer if they lose both competitions?
No, I don't think it needs a lot of change at all.
What's going to change this time next year if there's no change in the meantime?
I don't think there's a huge amount. I think Manchester City on paper are better. But if Eze's shot that hits the bar goes in, if Havertz scores the one-on-one against Donnarumma, these are fine margins within the game. So I'm not prepared to say, give me the whiteboard, throw the last one out, let's reinvent the wheel here. Do it again. I think we need a left winger. Trossard's been good. Martinelli has been good. But I think we need somebody on the left wing who's a mainstay. Like, we know Saka's on the right. Who have we got on the left? Gyökeres, I'm happy enough with him. I'm happy to give him another year with Havertz jumping in and doing a bit as well. Like, Havertz header in the last minute against City as well. That goes just over. They had some decent chances within the game. So, look, I'm happy enough. And second in the Premier League, semi-finals of the Champions League, final of the Carabao Cup, was a quarter-finals of the FA Cup. All indicators are we're doing well and getting better all the time, and we are bridging that gap. But the 80 million that City spend in January has just pushed them that little bit further ahead of Arsenal. And
it's the players they bought for that 80 million rather than just the
like
price.
Semenyo, unbelievable. And probably Mark one of the best wingers. Gahey has made everything a lot more solid. Even Donnarumma makes that mistake against Arsenal and they don't panic.
Arsenal could do that themselves, you know. They could identify a Semenyo and a Gahey and sign them, because this is an attractive club, isn't it?
Yeah, but see, if you're one of the more in-demand players, I mean, like I'm listening to Elliot Anderson, Forrest, and I'm looking, thinking, do you know what, Manchester United are looking at him, Liverpool are sniffing, Arsenal are sniffing, who does he want to go to? Manchester City. if you're one of the better players, you want to go to City. And you, as an Arsenal fan, I'm looking, thinking, if they sign Elliot Anderson, if they get one or two more.
So do you see Arsenal as an underdog in this title race?
Yeah, of course they are. Isn't everybody an underdog to Manchester City?
It's just because they were so far ahead.
They were so... Look, the points total, I think, was false because there was a game in hand for Manchester City. But Pep Guardiola, when you've got the best manager in the world saying to you in November, when it comes down to the run-in, we'll be right on the coattails of Arsenal and we'll click into gear.
Yes.
He's absolutely spot on. And that's what's happening.
Gyökeres has 12 Premier League goals, 18 in all competition, which is a reasonable debut campaign.
Absolutely fine for a first season in the Premier League. Mm. I'd be throwing on Madueke. I know Saka's been injured. Martinelli, Trossard. What shoes are goals return? If they'd have been up near double figures, then we've enough goals. And by the way, people are saying goals are an issue. What, are you three goals behind Manchester City? It's not an awful lot in the goal difference, so it's not that big of an issue, especially when Arsenal defend as well as they have done throughout the season. Like, 90% of Arsenal's season has been brilliant. It's just the odd little draw here, the loss there. It's difficult to be overly critical of them.
Arsenal in second place have 63 goals in their 33 games, 26 conceded, which is the fewest in the league. City have three more. And then in terms of goals scored, yeah, I mean, Arsenal have the second most this season behind City.
It's hard to be overly critical. And like I say, people say, oh, Gyökeres is not the answer. Gyökeres's return has been absolutely fine. The wingers, Odegaard hasn't scored a lot. Rice, Zubimendi hasn't got a lot. I think Miguel Marino getting injured as well is a big one for Arsenal. He would generally pop up in the last couple of minutes with a header or something to keep us going. So, look, Odegaard has been off form this season. He's been in and out. Saka's form and injury has been in and out. I think Marino was hurt as well. Probably City on paper are just that little bit better than Arsenal still. Mm. And that's what's happening.
What about poor Liam Rossignol?
Poor Liam Rossignol?
Poor Liam Rossignol. He's gone after 3.5 to 4 months.
Chelsea are absolutely mad, aren't they? Just
yeah. Do you think you would have played under Rossignol?
Well, he got
No. Is that because of all the Brentish quotes or the way he played football?
Bit of everything, really. I don't think he's a motivator. I was motivated by fear. I think he comes in and gets the tactics barred out and doubles the tactics where I just need to be motivated.
Motivated by fear. But you talked about Liam Buckley there beforehand when you were at Pats and he loved playing with the ball all the time and you loved that too at the same time. No, that's not fear, that's enjoyment.
Yeah.
But there are different ways, I'm saying. It's not just fear. Fear is such an adrenaline rush sprint type of emotion. Fear can't be sustainable long term, can it?
In terms of motivating people?
Every day to be fearful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think fear is the best motivator. And it's not like I had fear of Sean Dyche, I'd fear of Graeme Souness, but it was more, like, not physical, like, oh, he's going to come in and punch the head off me if I don't play well. It's more, I don't want to let that man down because Monday to Friday, he's picked me up, he makes me a better human being. He's trying with me and I want to give him something back. And then for me, like Liam Buckley, when I was in the heights of depression and drinking like a lunatic, he would put his arm around me. I remember, and unbeknownst to me, I only found this out years later, he went and rang me wife and I had a big belly on me. I think I was nearly 100 kilos at the time.
Yeah.
And I was playing centre midfield. I couldn't run around. And Liam rings me wife and doesn't give out about me, doesn't like badmouth me, just says to my wife, if Keith keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to hurt himself. He can't run around the pitch like he is and drink like he is at the weight he is. And was just worried about me well-being. And when I heard that, you know, he never said, oh, Keith needs to get fit because we need him to play. It was just, Keith's going to hurt himself here. And I thought they're the best managers, and like respect the ball, Liam Rossignol stuff, the straight balls into midfield. I mean, anybody with a set of eyes can see that Sanchez needs to go. They need to get rid of him. He's mistake. Three out of the back four aren't good enough. Gusto, the two centre halves. The only one I'd be keeping is Cucurella. And the lads up the top end are great. Palmer's great, Casido's great, Enzo Fernandez, World Cup winner, but needs to go. Yeah. He's already said he wants to go. Yeah. But the way Liam Rossignol handled that is totally different to the way any other top manager would have handled that. I mean, he ends up with Enzo Fernandez sitting behind the bench against Manchester United. He's a World Cup winner and probably your best midfielder. Surely there was a way to handle that better. And especially when he comes out and apologises, surely you say, well, public apology, I'll put you back in. You're pointing your nose off.
Is that an inexperienced manager trying to prove a point that he's
the
boss?
Yeah, I think so. He thought, well, he's stepped out of line, I need to show that I'm the boss here, whereas Pep Guardiola, if somebody comes out, like, didn't Rodri do something saying, I want to go back to La Liga at some point this season, and Pep Guardiola doesn't make an issue of it.
Yeah. Other football news this week as well, only yesterday emerging that Football Focus on BBC is no more. I don't know what your boys' experience of this is, but it was at one point in time, I'd say about 20 years ago,
yeah.
It was great viewing. It was great to be a football fan on Saturday if you had the time. Soccer AM in the morning, 9 to 12, and then Football Focus starts at BBC. Dan Walker, Mark Lawrenson, AL, seemed to have lost its buzz in the last few years, and yeah. Now it's gone. And they were quite transparent with the reasoning too.
Yeah.
Match of the Day posted saying it's viewing habits have changed and they need to adapt to the modern way.
Yeah, it is one of those watch. Things,
you know,
isn't it?
It was like people aren't tuning into terrestrial television, especially when Football Focus is on at the same time as the early kickoff. And there's almost always now a 12:30 Saturday kickoff in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Very hard to capture that audience.
Like 52 years is an awful long time for a show to be going.
Yeah.
I'm all for keeping that stuff around for as long as you physically and possibly can, but
people miss this out there.
That's the thing. I think people will miss the idea of it, but
exactly.
How many of those people were actually watching it? I'm not sure.
We had Fenner's on from Soccer AM a few weeks ago, and a lot of people called for him on his social media accounts when he's out and about to say, "Oh, you got to bring Soccer AM back, got to bring it back." And he says that's lovely to hear, and it's great for the ego and all that. But he says it wouldn't work. It wouldn't work bringing it back. It was of its time, and it's great that it happened, but you just enjoy it. And maybe it's the same with Football Focus. They changed the cast, and I suppose they tried to change the setup, and people just didn't follow it. BBC they're having this kind of existential crisis and identity issue
over
the last few years that they can't really put their finger on how to fix it. And this is probably just the latest example of it. But I love that show. You probably weren't watching it because you were busy playing at that time.
I remember little snippets. You know, like if there was a lower ranked team, so to say, in the FA Cup, and they'd do a deep dive into the club and what it was like, and you'd see the stuff in the background. I used to love that type of stuff. But yeah, in terms of actually watching it, sitting down and watching it, I'd generally be on the way to a football match anyway, so wouldn't have got to see too much of it.
It's a similar thing with... you remember Goals on Sunday? They used to be on with Chris Kamara and Ben Shepherd.
Yes.
And before that, you'd have Sunday Supplement. And I know when I was a kid, like it used to be a case of like Dad would be watching Sunday Supplement, I'd rock in, and then I'd catch the last 20 minutes of Sunday Supplement and watch. Just want to see Goals on Sunday to see all the goals. And the Sunday Supplement is back now in a different form, and it's nothing like what it was when it was.
Is that good or bad?
I think. See, this is the thing. It's one of those, as you're saying, is it probably had its time.
Yeah.
And if you're going to, I think what they do now is there's a couple of people on Zoom and all that. It's just a little bit different.
I love the kitchen setup.
That's what I'm saying. Kitchen setup, you pew papers knocking around.
Walking and dying hungover Sunday morning. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And I think that's probably what it is. It's fine to do what they're doing now, but I wouldn't have maybe branded it myself. I suppose they branded it as the Sunday Supplement because people will watch it because, Sunday Supplement, I'll watch this, but maybe they could have gone down a different route with it. But I think it's a similar thing with Football Focus in that probably it did have its time, you know.
Kind of felt like not quite a podcast, but it was like a magazine show, wasn't it, Football Focus? They'd always have one really interesting segment. Gar Crooks might go off and interview a manager at a club that's like not as talked about as other clubs. I just thought it was an interesting show and it had its time, but people are lamenting it and getting very nostalgic yesterday when that news was announced. Anyway, listen, Keith Tracy, great to have you in.
Cheers, lad.
Thanks a million for coming.
Thanks for having me.
God almighty, you're getting further away every day.
I know.
All right, welcome back. 8:09 a.m. on this Friday morning's Off the Ball Breakfast. Delighted now to be joined by Keith Friday. Keith, good morning.
Morning, everybody.
If you had access to a world-class recording studio to listen to just one recorded version of a song through the best speakers in the world, what song would that be?
You know, I opened this one to the floor last night. I asked my wife and all. I wasn't sure. But she was going on mad stuff. She was wanting classical music and all. But for me, Pink Floyd, Comfortably Numb. One of those songs you can get just lost in. Close your eyes and forget where you are.
I didn't know you were a Pink Floyd fan.
Yeah, a little bit. I honestly, I'm so erratic. Like, it can be metal music one day, R&B the next, dance music to chilled out Pink Floyd stuff. I'm all eclectic, I think they call it.
Yeah, it's very...
Absolutely all over the place. Well, yeah, I think Comfortably Numb would be mine.
That's nice. I might listen to that now after.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's a long... Was it about 5 minutes long?
Yeah. That's good.
What's yours? You definitely have a song in the locker.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking of a song that you'd appreciate the bass in a world-class studio. So I have Louie Louie by The Kingsmen.
I've no idea what you're talking about. Oh, okay, yeah.
That's good. put it there. You might get copyright though.
That part. It's secondary copyright will be all right. We won't get the email. Yeah. That's what I'd have. I'd have it blaring in because you know when you're having the earphones in and you can hear like this is class. Yeah. You know, it's going to damage my ears like when turning it up.
Yeah, you get the message on the phone going, your earphones are too loud.
Relax there, buddy. Yeah. Get your shouts in. Get your shouts in for the song you'd like to hear. In a world-class studio, world-class recordings.
What about your walk-on? Would it be different?
My walk-on is... Depends what it's funny you asked that.
What, is this wrestling walk-on, darts walk-on?
I'm thinking boxing or MMA.
Oh, I see. I immediately thought we'd go to darts. I think the darts walk-ons are the best.
I do...
But they're totally different, though, because boxing, you're going out and you're like... This is a fight, you know.
Darts,
like, you can have a bit of crack.
You want the crowd. I think for the darts, you need like an anthem. You need something the crowd are going to be singing when the song ends, you know? Like when the song ends, they continue it on. Whereas with boxing or fighting, it's a little bit different. But
I'd have Baker Street, Jerry Rafferty.
Blur song too,
for the fight.
Keenan says.
Yeah.
That's a bit nice.
I'd be the heel.
You'd be gone.
No, there's a real like arrogant sax solo in the bridge. And you play that right and you get booed out the building.
Yeah,
and
you want to play that character.
You're just walking slowly to the ring. Obviously you have to win, ideally. And then it ages very well.
Yeah.
You lose not so much, you know. Get your shouts in there. Did you say song too, did you?
No, Dermot Keenan suggested that in the comments there, yeah.
Thank Best you. Entrance music, Stone Cold Steve Austin. The glass breaking and then straight out. The rattlesnake. Love it.
One of the darts players walks on to Madonna like a prayer.
Oh, yeah, well, that's gone real...
But the crowd love it.
It's got a new life, hasn't it?
The crowd love it, Keith. Yeah, yeah. There's a few Madonna songs that come back into the fray. It's a different one that's come back into the fray, I think, yeah.
That's a tune,
yeah,
as well.
But
follow that tune,
yeah,
Si.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah, yes. Yes, that's it. But the crowd, Keith, I'm telling you, the crowd like it.
Too late, I want to dance with someone.
Yeah, that's the one. Get into the groove. That's your man doing his shoulder, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Your nicest interaction with a fan? Roy Larmour's saying The Brood. The Brood, that's a great tune. Gangrel, Edge and Christian, The Brood.
Dara is waiting in the wings and has told me that song is called Into the Groove, yeah.
Into the Groove.
I know, I say it.
My nicest interaction with a fan, back in the day when I was playing for Blackburn, there used to be a couple, an older woman and an older man. And I remember we were actually playing against Manchester City's reserves and I was getting abuse. I think it was off the Blackburn fans. I'm not sure for what. But this couple...
you definitely do. Go on.
No, I've honestly no idea. They used to call me Treacle Tracy, the Blackburn fans, because they said it looked like I was running in treacle. When you look at the sprint speeds, I was one of the quickest in the team, but that didn't seem to matter to the Blackburn fans too much. But there was this couple, and when I first came over, I played for the reserves, and they'd always ask me how I am and, you know, didn't just want autographs. But they would always defend me. And I remember getting lifted out of it one day by the Blackburn fans and them two turning around and giving the fans a bit back on my behalf. Say, leave him alone. He's only a kid. He's not Damien Duff yet. Blah, blah. That was probably the nicest one. I also had a letter sent in to Burnley Football Club when the stuff about me drinking and my depression came out. There was this long letter from a father who had brought his son to the game, and it was really, really nice letter saying how much the kid loved me and I was his favourite player and he only came to the game to watch me, and you know, I had inspired him to go and play football and all this type of stuff. But generally had to rack me brains for nice interactions with fans, and I mean that as a player. As a pundit, it's been absolutely brilliant, you know, people shouting stuff at me in the street about Arsenal in jest, obviously, and it's been brilliant as a pundit, but as a player, very, very few nice interactions.
Keith Friday, can you hang on for the rest of the show?
Yeah, might as well.
Nice one for that. Baker Street, favourite song, class. Great to hear, Niall. Cashmere by Led Zeppelin, says Stephen McCarthy, that is a great show.
Rock the Casbah.
By The Clash. There is a Clash shout here, actually, by someone. Where did I see that? Oh, I Fought the Law. Yeah, another good option.
What about Tequila? Everybody can enter that, wouldn't they?
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.